Hello everybody, James here, and it's story time with Dutch Mantel, 63.5 or Ask Dutch Anything 7. We've got books first, but I'll let Dutch plug his. So it's The World According to Dutch, as we can see. And there's also another one called...
Tales from a Dirt Road.
And
if you want those, you can order them from Amazon. Or, to be forward-thinking like I am, if you want them autographed, just email me at dirtydutchmantel with two L's at gmail.com and ask me about them, and I'll get right back to you with it. So
I have two books as well, but they're down there, and you know, I don't want to lean around and get them. Owen Hart, King of Pranks, and Dwayne Rock Johnson, the People's Champion, two fine biographies of two fine wrestlers. The best biography on both of those people, I dare say. I think it's easily said, quite frankly. Both available on Amazon as well. Links are in the description of this video, every video, and the podcast itself. We also have t-shirts. You people mean nothing to me. And also, Respect the Stash, a fine t-shirt. I look at that, I even had a little reveal. And I should also say that we have two shows a week now. You probably know that since this is the Tuesday one, the new one. And it's Tuesdays and Fridays, 8 a.m. Eastern. And a good 2.5 hours of content every week that we're producing at the moment. And if you want to write in questions for this show and every Tuesday show going forward, questionsfordutch@gmail.com and submit your question there. And if it's really, really, really good and we have the time, we'll answer it. And before we get to the first question, I had Ricky Morton on recently on my main channel, WSI, on YouTube, and he told a story about you and a Cadillac. So I've heard his version of it. Tell us your version.
Well, my version is I didn't really think much about it when it happened, but I think we were at the Admiral Benbow Inn that I don't think's even there anymore in Memphis. And I didn't much notice it at the time, but the clientele were drug dealers, late night hookers and pimps, and wrestlers. So we would go there on a Friday night after we do a Friday night show around Memphis, and we go and stay over at that hotel because it was right down the street from Channel 5, so we were right there at it. And we would check in, and so one night we pull in there. It was me and Robert and Ricky Morton, Robert Gibson, and we get out of the car, and I think I'm walking by, and there's a pimp standing there with the hat on and all the duds on, and even looking doing his nose, and he looked at me and he went, "Death Mantel," he said, "bad motherfucker, baby." And Ricky heard that and he started laughing, and he laughed all that night. And even when I see him now, if I see him at a convention or something, he'll say the same thing to me. He said, "Death Mantel, bad motherfucker, baby." And he tells that story. You know, I mean, he don't tell it every time I'm around him, but he will always say the bad MF-er part of it. So I could tell that Ricky really liked that guy saying that. So,
boy,
and I never will forget it either.
Ricky can spin a yarn, can't he? He's a great storyteller.
Great, great guy to make a trip with. And we tried to get him on here, except he had another booking. So I'm going to try again, hopefully next week. We can have him on the podcast.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, he's too much. And great guy. I've known him actually forever. I remember I had just started working here in Tennessee, and Ricky, he's from Nashville somewhere. I remember I was in a gym one day. And I knew who he was. I just never met him. And he kept looking at me, and he kept looking at me. And finally, he came over and he said, "Are you Dutch Mantel?" I went, "No, why?" "Oh, embarrassed the hell out of him." He said, "Oh, no." And he started, I'm kidding you. And that's how my that's how my relationship started with Ricky. It started on a joke. It started on a rib. but good guy. And I've made thousands and thousands and thousands of miles with it. So
the first question, we're going to get to the fan questions. And once again, if you want your email read, your question read out, email questionsfordutch@gmail.com. And this fella, Garrett Hernandez, did just that. He said, any chance you can ask Dutch about this clip from the Cornette show? Now, I'm not going to play the clip from the Cornette show, but Dutch, you have watched this. So can you explain the gist of the clip and tell me how true or otherwise it is?
Well, let me ask this. Why can't you play it? Because of intellectual?
Something like that. I think technically we could, but I'm just not going to. So
intellectual content.
Yeah, go on.
Okay. Somebody asked Cornette, was it about, did I ever, it was about Dixie Carter too.
Yeah. I'll be the fan. I'll be the fan writing in. And it was something like, hey, Jim, did Dutch ever tell you something to the effect of that he saw or he heard that someone saw Dixie Carter, Karen Angle, and Pac-Man Jones in some sort of sordid menage a trois when all three of those were in TNA at the time? And apparently you were the source of this information, supposedly.
Well, I am not the source of this information because I never said this, because it never happened. And I never walked in on anybody, nor did I know anybody walking in on a situation such as that. So I'm going to have to plead totally innocent of having ever uttered those words of a menage a trois. Can you imagine that though? But I'm not going to go there. I never said it. It never happened. And I think Jim on the show says he never heard me say that.
Mm-hmm. Because you two used to ride, well, was it to the hotel and back together?
No, we would go to Orlando. I would fly in. Jimmy would drive in. Jimmy has this strange fetish. It's not so much of a fetish that he hated to fly. And that's why he would drive everywhere. So for him to drive from Louisville, Kentucky to Orlando, Florida, you know how far that is? That's about 600 miles or 550. It's a long way. And he would spend the night on the way down. Then he would come to Orlando, spend the night. And then he'd do TV for 2 days. And then he'd start back. And he would be gone almost a week just to come down to do TNA and TNA TV. And where I would ride with him to the taping facility, which was at Universal, he would be at the same hotel as I would, and his car would be there. And I said, hey, can I catch a ride? That's it. And I just started riding with him over and back. And we were always down there for 2 days. We would do two full tapes, and we did another show for syndication. I forgot what the name of that
Explosion,
was.
Explosion, I think.
Something like that. We did something for that. And I would ride with him every week. So getting in the car after the show with Jim, oh my God, it was the most exciting time of the day. And it was goddamn this and that damn Russo. Oh, and he just going, and this guy did this and this, you know, I hate that bastard. And oh, it was really, because that was my highlight reel of the day. And it was like a 10-minute ride from the studio at Universal back to the hotel. But by the time we'd get there, he'd gotten it all out, and he was much better. So, but I would hear it all then, very, very. And I wish I'd just taped some of those, because it would make for great listening.
Orlando to Louisville is 858 miles.
Really?
Yes.
Well, Atlanta to Orlando to Tampa is like 400. And then you got to go through Nashville. Yeah, you got to go through Nashville, which is another 200. Mm. And you got to go up to Louisville. Oh.
What was the story about why Cornette hated to fly? What was the one specific incident, or did he ever tell you?
He didn't tell me. He was just afraid to fly. He just was.
Now, going back to the actual question itself, the quote from the video is that you once called Serge the sperm donor. And and everything else that we've just addressed previously. Is there any credence to the rumours that you believe that maybe Dixie Carter was hanging around with some of the male talents purely because she liked them in a non-wrestling sense?
Again, I'm going to plead nolo contendere. I guess that's the way you say it in Latin, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I'll say one thing Dixie liked to do. She liked to drink. She could slam them down, buddy. And I don't drink that much. But one night in the, I forgot where we stayed at. It was a pretty nice place. They had a good little bar downstairs. So I would go in after everything's over to relax. And somebody he'd have a drink or have a beer. And it didn't take a lot for me, but Dixie, I would be watching her and she'd be. A lot of men couldn't stay with her. And she would just get a little bit more out of control. And so what happened after the bar, you hear all kind of stuff. As far as me personally speaking, I just heard things, but I have no idea if they're true or not. She had her husband with her too. To which I'm thinking, wait a minute, that couldn't have happened because Serge was with her in the bar. But I kept hearing stuff. So I didn't go and research it. I didn't go and put the Dutch investigative crew or team on it. It was just things I heard. So, but Dixie was a party animal. And I have to say, she was a lot of fun when she was drinking. She was a hell of a lot of fun.
We should move on. Greetings, Dutch and James. What were your thoughts on the New Breed tag team from the Crockett days? Did you work with them? They had a pretty interesting gimmick. They seemed to be getting pushed pretty well, but disappeared. Thank you for the stories.
I don't know what happened to them. Chris Champion was one of them. Mm-hmm. And I knew him a lot better than I knew the other kid. And then all of a sudden, yeah, the push stopped. And I don't know why. And all the times I was with Chris, he never said one way or the other. But he was a good guy. And he ended up coming to Nashville. And actually, that's where he died. He died in Nashville. So, but other than that, I don't know what happened to him. And they were the New Breed.
Yeah.
Their names.
Yeah. The other one was called Sean Royal.
Yeah. And they had a good gimmick. And I thought they would have pushed them more. Two athletic guys, not really that big, but they were big enough. They was like 210, maybe. But I can't answer why they stopped it. And I never worked together with them again, except for Chris.
And they came from the year 2002, the future, where they often refer to Dusty Rhodes as Mr. President because he was the president in 2002 in Dusty's mind only, I think. There, we will move on. Harper's Jar. I have been dying to know this for quite a while. I always
Harper,
hear
Harper's what?
Harper's Jar.
Jar. J-A-R?
Yeah, it's what he's calling himself. Someone called him. I always hear wrestlers talk in shoots about ribs and rib culture, but it is always in past tense, seemingly. Is ribbing still a thing in the wrestling community? Did Dutch see any of it in TNA or his recent WWE run at all? Ribs in later TNA or the Zeb Coulter run.
Well, you may have one guy ribbing another guy, but it's nothing to the extent it used to be. One of the world's worst, I think, was Who was Davey Boy Smith's partner?
Dynamite.
Dynamite Kid. No, nobody worse than that guy. He did some serious ribs, but he did some ribs with actual human feces. I mean, things that were like brutal. And like the one that the 1-2-3 Kid did on Sonny.
Mm-hmm.
What was his name? Sean what?
Waltman.
Sean Waltman. That was a brutal. That was another some excrement from somebody's body. And they did, but nobody does that now anymore. I think if you did that, you'd get fired. I think. But Vince was a big ribber too. So when he'd hear somebody do a rib, I think he would judge first from the creativity of it and the grossness of it. And then he would judge from there. I never knew anybody to get fired because of pulling a rib. And there's been some rough ones over the years. If I think of another one, which I probably will before this podcast is over, I'll throw it out to you.
Well, I was actually just looking when you may have shared a locker room with the Nasty Boys, and you would have done in 1919 WCW. They were known as, people who'd shit in a tub and leave it in the room. That kind
See,
of thing.
I didn't use that word, James.
No, but you used other coarse language at the beginning of the podcast as well. So, but that was purely in quotational terms for historical context.
Yeah, I was never around the Nasty Boys that much. I was, but I wasn't. So, you know, they were pretty rough too. I mean, there's a one time I remember this. It was. Let me remember this right.
Do you want me to pause?
Jerry Jarrett told Joe and Jackie Fargo. They in Tennessee, they used to have like 2 out of 3 fall matches, but the guys would come back to the dressing room between the first and second fall, take a little 5-minute breather, and they'd go back. They start the second fall. I've never saw this anywhere but Tennessee. And then after the second fall, they'd come back. But one night, they come back after the first fall, and Jerry Jarrett sitting in there getting ready to go. And he had some kind of powder that would make you itch. So he went over there to their lockers, took the powder and their underwear, and dumped it in there. And he did the other one. So they came back and they'd get dressed and they put it on and said, well, and Jerry said, well, I'll see you down the road. They said, okay, man, see you tomorrow. Okay. Jackie and Tojo left. I think Jackie Fargo was telling me the story. He said, we left and, you know, about 10 minutes I was going. Then I look over, Tojo's going. So they start scratching. It took them about an hour before they realized that somebody had put something in their underwear that made them itch. They had to stop and actually straighten it out and change clothes if they had any, but take those drawers off. And they finally got, and they knew that Jerry Jarrett had done it. So they asked him the other day, they asked him the next day, did he do it? And he said, what? Of course I didn't do that. Do you think I would do that to you guys? So what they did, Jerry said, they waited 2 weeks. Then one night, then they did the same thing to him. Put it in there, and then they left. And then Jerry, I think Jackie was riding with him that night. And he was saying, I'm itching all over. Then finally said, up, okay, you son of a bitch. I know what you did. Stop the car. So he had to get out and change too. And then Jackie said, hey, I didn't do it. I didn't know. See, on ribs like that, you never took credit for it, really. Just with the other people, not with the one you did it with. You never took credit with it. So.
Next question. Shannon Lush says, hello, James and Dutch. Greetings from Newfoundland, Canada. Always loved Dutch's great stories and memories of the business. Recently, I got my hands on Gary Hart's autobiography, and it is, we believe this, very anti-Dutch overall.
What?
I got my, what is Dutch's side of the story, and how did that heat get started? Apologies if this has already been covered before. Thank you kindly. Great podcast. Keep up the good work. I don't know what he said, because his book is very hard to get hold of.
I don't know what he said either. The only time I ever really met Gary Hart is I went to Texas to work. It was in January. Had a snowstorm hit. And houses weren't that good. And I didn't stay there long. I stayed there maybe 3 weeks to a month. And I had emergency at home, so I had to go home. And I went and I told him, I was in Houston. I said, Gary, I gotta go tonight. I gotta finish up. And he did say, you know, it's customary to give a 2-week notice. I said, I know, but I can't help this. So I left. And so if he got mad over that, I'm sorry. I never knew I had heat with Gary Hart. I always liked him. But I guess some things that I would do as a talent, maybe if I'd have thought it a little more deeper. But when something happens, you got to go, you got to go. So, and I don't even think I said I'll call you back, because I wasn't intending to anyway. I just didn't like the way that the territory worked. I felt odd there. Let me say that. So if he took that wrong, I hate that. So Gary, I know you're gone. I don't know if you can hear me, but I love you and hope you're in a better place. And I never meant to antagonize you.
Yeah.
Is that a good enough apology?
Yeah, I think so. So Shannon, who wrote this in, if you could actually give us a quote or the gist of what it was that Gary was unhappy with, then let us both know, because we'd both be interested in that one. Next question, Colin Kirby. Hello, Dutch and James. I was wondering if Dutch could share his thoughts on his feud with Wildcat Wendell Cooley during his time in Continental circa 1987. What are his thoughts on Mr. Cooley and why he didn't become a bigger star when he seemed to have all the qualities to become one? I've loved the podcast since day one, and I look forward to it every Tuesday and Friday. Keep up the great work, gentlemen. Thank you.
No, Wendell did. He had all the talents. Good-looking guy. Like, he wore a cowboy hat and cowboy Wendell Cooley. And he looked the part. He did. And I think if somebody had just taken a little more time with him and kind of had a little patience with him, they could have gotten him over. I think he went to Charlotte. Or he's in WCW at one point. And his work was great. He was the one that I first noticed throwing the super kick, because he could really throw it, and he did a good interview, and I had a good run with him in Continental. It was, you know, you feel some things that are natural, that fit. Me and Wendell fit together, and we drew a little money. He wanted to play guitar. So I play guitar. And I tried to teach him a little bit. I hope he said he's learned by now. I talked to him not too long ago. He said he's learned guitar by now. So, but again, great look, great work, and a good interview. So he had it all if somebody had just taken their time with him.
He was also in Puerto Rico as well. So WCW and World Wrestling Council, and he had a WWF tryout match as well that apparently didn't go any further. What was your issue?
Wait a minute. What'd you say? What? A Puerto Rico?
Yes, it says he was in World Wrestling Council at one point. Don't know when.
I never heard of he was there.
I'll find out when exactly. One sec. And between 91 and 92. Early 92 was the last one in March. So that was when you were still with Where would you have been at that point? I'm trying to think.
He would have. He was in Puerto Rico during that time?
Yeah, 91 to about March 92.
Yeah, he wouldn't. Yeah, Puerto Rico doesn't agree with everybody.
No.
So he probably went down there and missed the States or missed his family. I'm going home. I've seen guys go down there and spend a week and said, screw this. I'm out of here. And they'd leave.
I am going to move on now. And Cody Ruiz, what do you think of Paul Heyman's comments? Also, what is your opinion on Chris Benoit as a wrestler? Now, he sent a video from Inside the Ropes with Paul Heyman cussing out an audience member. And it's another video that I'm not going to show, although I probably could get permission for this one. I could ask. But I'm not going to show it just in case because I've not asked yet. So, that being said, Paul Heyman basically takes umbrage with a fan who keeps saying, Chris Benoit, he's my boy. And Paul Heyman says...
Yeah. I've seen this before.
Okay, then yeah, you run me through it and run me through your opinions of what Heyman said and if he's right.
Well, Heyman was doing this interview in front of a crowd. I don't know when it was. I think it was at like a WrestleMania
No, get together. It was Scotland.
Is that what it was?
It was, okay. Yeah.
He was talking to some kid, kept saying, what about my boy Benoit? What about my boy Chris Benoit? Kept on. And it pissed off Paul. And Paul says, and he kind of was getting rough on the guy. He said, let me tell you one thing about Chris Benoit. He says, and I forgot what he said. He said, three people died that day, and two of them didn't have a choice. And the third one, you know, killed himself after he killed the other two. So he said, in my book, he's a piece of shit and he's a piece of crap. I don't want to talk about him. And one guy was trying to put over Chris Benoit's the wrestling abilities. And he turned around and he says, if you want to just judge him on that, you can. I'm not. But he says, if in my book, he says, As a performer, he was the top five. And in the other thing that he did, he was the lowest piece of crap on this earth. And he let it go. So do I agree with him? I agree with him on the lowest piece of crap. I do. I do agree with him on that. As far as him being in the top five in the world in professional wrestling, I guess, maybe. He did a lot of good stuff. I don't think you could really make him your top guy because he couldn't talk. And I don't know if he could convey emotion. I don't know that. But as far as performing, I mean, he had a hell of a good arsenal of moves. And I don't know who trained him, but he did well,
Stampede, Calgary. He was a Dynamite Kid, basically, self-admittedly, a copy of Dynamite Kid in the early days.
Well, but when you look at him in the ring, he's 5'5", 5'6".
No, I think legitimately he's probably around the 5'8", 5'9" mark around that.
Well, but still, at 5'8", against a 6'2" guy, 6'3", That's almost average for WWE then. He's not a very big guy. And now if he was in the ring with another guy who could do the same type of stuff, they'd have a banger, as they call it now, a banger. Mm-hmm. They'd have a hell of a match. But the thing about having bangers is the first night you see them, boom, da, boom, 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 wow, what a match. They bring them back the next week. Boom, da, boom, da, boom, da, boom, da, boom. Oh, well, they had another one. By the time they bring the third one around, well, you've already seen everything these guys can do, basically. Everything. That's why you have to have a story. Now, when you have the story, now they can cut that bangy, bangy, bangy stuff out and tell the story, but keep their banging stuff in there. They just tone them down. That's what a lot of people don't understand. You just can't keep having the same match over and over and over again, just performing. They want a story, and where is this leading me? Mm-hmm. See, that's where the winner and the loser actually has significance, which today, sometimes, they can do stuff. It doesn't matter who wins. Sometimes, and that's why I used to like Broadway matches. And a Broadway match is a time limit draw. You never see them ever anymore. Because, you know, when you get close to the, say you got a 15-minute time limit, 13 minutes, 2 minutes remaining. Now you alert the fans, hey, if one's going to win, you're going to got to do it in 2 minutes. You got the clock on you. 14 minutes. Oh, it's counting down. Oh, God. And one guy looks like he's going to win, going to win. I've seen guys time it so close. Referee would go, one, two, ding, 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 before they come down on the three. So, but.
Did you ever meet Benoit? Because I know he had like a couple of tryouts in WWE.
I met him. I met him in not Calgary. I met him in Edmonton, I think. Somewhere way up north. If I'd have went, I swear to God, I was so far up in Canada. If I'd have went another 100 miles, I'd be up the damn Arctic. I'd be at the North Pole. Cold, and he was standing in the back. We had a show, WCW show there. And he came to it, and I'm standing out, and he come over and introduced himself. You know, and I'd heard about him. But, and I'm not tall, but I was taller than he was. I was probably then 5'11", maybe. Hell, I'm like 5'2" now. I'm all beat up and jammed up and squashed and everything else. But he was kind of looking up at me. And that's when I said he's not really a big guy. So, but I agree with Paul. He probably a great, tremendous technical worker. But as far as drawing you money, I don't think. And he may have drawn a little money in ECW. Because, you know, that little bingo hall they had, they could only hold like 1,200 people, I guess. And once you sell it out, you sell it out. I mean, you can't get any more people in there.
And yeah, they sold out whether he was there or not. I think they sold it out no matter what the card was, pretty much.
Well, I don't know. I've only been in that building once. And they said it used to be a hellhole. They've cleaned it up now. It's not too bad now, but I was on the convention there and they cleaned it up. But do I agree with Paul? 100% on the first one about him being a low piece of humanity. I agree with him there and being the five top. Yeah, that's subjective. So that's debatable.
We shall move on. Now, Rusty Loudermilk has sent in 10 reasons, because we did a video last week, or a question last week,
yep,
about Jim Crockett Jr. and why basically JCP fell apart. I'll be very quick here and running through it, but I want to pick up on number 9 out of number 10. So, the Watts purchase was a payment in the range of $33,000 a month. Now, these are all reasons why Crockett went out of business by 1988 in his spendthrift ways. Number 2, Crockett purchased 2 airplanes with 2 full-time pilots on retainer. Number 3, Crockett got a lease on Dallas's office after Watts' purchase while still having an office in Charlotte too, which we think we may well have talked about, in fact. Number 4, Vince blocked Crockett off most of pay-per-view, we talked about. Number 5, guaranteed contracts way before guarantees were the norm in the business. Number 6, purchasing of Dying Territories. Number 7, developing the wrestling network for syndication and ad sales that never came to pass. Number 8, taking Starcade out of Greensboro to Chicago, which really hurt their business. We could talk about that at some point soon. Number 9. But let me ask number 10 first. Same staff in Charlotte without adding any new staff, even though company was expanding nationally in the country. But number 9, Dusty Rhodes' self-centered booking. Now, I've also talked about Ricky Morton about this. He's very adamant that Dusty had his people he wanted to push, and Ricky and Robert were essentially too popular without Dusty's intervention or getting the rub off Dusty, and he was jealous. So Dusty is a booker and sort of getting in his own way in that sense.
Let me, I think Charlotte, that Charlotte office, they progressed on this in the wrong way. I don't know why they were trying to take over dying territories anyway. Hang on a minute. What happened?
I'm here.
What did I do here?
I'll pause. Okay, sorry, slight technical glitch. Carry on. Nearly called you Dusty then. Dutch.
Yeah, Charlotte is a... it's an interesting look at how you kill your territory from the inside. They saw that Vince was taking over the country, and Vince had a totally different business outlook on the wrestling business. And I think that they were trying to take over territories and try to run the territory like it was before. The house show business was basically dead. They were going off. WWE was making their money off their TV. They were selling their show as a show, where I think Charlotte was still trying to almost work under the, you know, the commercial arrangement of is it's a, what do they call it?
Infomercial.
It's a infomercial. And that killed them. They wanted to send me to Florida. I've covered this before. I said, I'll go because I, you know, what are you going to say? So when it come time to go, I went the other way. So as far as Dusty self-promoting himself, yes, he did. He was over, and he would do that to Nikita Koloff too, when Nikita would get in a spot that he needed a partner, or Dusty would make himself a partner, especially against the other Russians. He would go in on with the Rock and Roll when they needed to make a six man against the Midnight Express and somebody else. Dusty would stick himself in there, and he would just do stuff like that. I don't know how much money that. See, you assume that you're getting paid main event money, whatever that is. That main event money in every territory was basically different. So if you had a guy, you guaranteed him $2,000 a week. I don't care where he was on the card. He could be second match, but he'd still expect that $2,000 that week. And where did that $2,000 come from? It came out of the house gate money. Exactly. They didn't take said, well, the main event gets this percent and this gets this percent. They didn't do that. It was basically whatever they thought the guy would, he would take and go with. They never had anything in writing that you're going to get like of the house. You're going to get like 25% of 33% or something like that. It was, and because none of the wrestlers ever saw the books, they never saw the ticket sales. They never saw the receipts. They never saw anything. Basically, when they looked out there and they saw a full house, they didn't know what they were going to be getting, because I've had them tell me, yeah, but we give a lot of tickets away. What? And that was one of their reasons that your payoff wasn't like it should be. So what else did Ricky say?
Right. So very specifically, Ricky said that, and Robert Gibson told me the same thing as well, is that, let's say the Rock and Roll were headlining against the Midnight Express on the B towns, while Dusty and Ric Flair and whoever else was on the A towns.
Mm-hmm.
And the B towns with Robert and Ricky on top would be outdrawing the A towns with Dusty on top. And according to Ricky and Robert, that wouldn't do in Dusty's eyes. So he would either shunt Ricky and Robert down the card, or take them off the road, or insert himself with Ricky and Robert to make it seem like he drew the house instead.
Well, I never heard of him taking them off the road, because that would have been noticeable to,
well, yeah,
to Crockett himself.
Well, I mean, eventually he got rid of him in, was it 88 or something? But yeah, so Dusty would be very jealous if anyone else outshone him, basically.
Okay, why did Ricky say that he left Charlotte?
I think it was a dispute over money and a dispute with Dusty.
Maybe. I heard one time they were going to put the world title on Ricky. Did he tell you this?
Mm-hmm.
And He said, well, what's going to happen to Robert? They said, well, we'll probably let him go. And he didn't like that, so he refused the belt from Flair and to keep Robert working. And I thought to myself, well, you should have took the belt, Ricky, because now you would have had more control and you could have insisted that Robert stay anyway. So, but he never replied to that. So, but yeah, Dusty did put himself, he did put himself on top every chance he got.
I'm going to stick with this briefly.
You know who was you know who the real Booker was in Charlotte?
No.
J.J. Dillon.
He was the assistant Booker, wasn't he? But was he really the one doing all the legwork?
He did all the legwork. Dusty would go in there and said, here's the main event, or here's the two main events. Book the card. And J.J., this is J.J. talking now. He said he would take that card that they were going to advertise, you know, those two big matches, and he booked the rest of it. He would book five matches underneath that or whatever he'd book, and he would book that for the whole territory. Say they had like, I don't think Charlotte had that many guys. They had like 30, and they would put about 14 or 15 or 16 or whatever on a card, big card to have sometimes maybe 20 guys. But J.J. Dillon in a little adjacent office, the Dusty's, Dusty go in there and said, here, yep, you know, book the rest of it. And J.J., he didn't mind. You know, he had booked territories before himself anyway, so he enjoyed it.
Go on.
I went in one day. You talking about the two planes he bought?
Yeah.
I don't know if he bought two, but I guess he may have.
Yeah, no, there was meant to be like the main one and then supposedly the other one called the Jabroni Jet.
Yeah, well, I didn't mind which one I was going to be on. I just didn't want to drive. I remember I went in one time and, you know, if you didn't fly, you'd have to drive. And it was like somewhere way up in Virginia. And I went in there and I said, J.J., please, get me on that plane somehow. He said, I don't know. It's full. I said, oh, come on, man. Dump somebody. Just get me on there. And I don't know if he dumped anybody or not, but I made the plane. And I was happy as hell to make that plane. Mm-hmm. I sat back there and let's go. And I was ready to go.
Did you have to pay for the plane free?
No. That was one thing about Crockett. If he could have kept that up and kept drawing, it would have been a great place to work if you didn't crash your plane. But that hadn't gone down. But I enjoyed working in Charlotte.
to wrap it up then, where do you place and why Dusty Rhodes in the pantheon of bookers? What were his good points? What were his bad points?
Well, Dusty, I think, was good at creating stories, but he was also the best at creating stories that surrounded him. See, he was such an engaging, intriguing figure. He would get over, but his matches couldn't go that long. I mean, a 15-minute match for Dusty was kind of a long match. So that's why he surrounded himself with guys like the Rock and Roll Express, like Magnum TA, like Nikita Koloff, those guys like that. He Jimmy the Garvins, and he would surround himself with those people that could put time in and were very, very entertaining to watch. And then after he pieced all that together underneath him, then he'd go to the ring and he'd blow it off. So I got this cough. I've had it for like 2 weeks. I'm dying. So, and where do I place him in the pantheon of bookers?
It's a good word, that.
I like that word. The pantheon. I like that. I would say I've seen a lot of good bookers. I would say Jerry Jarrett, I learned the most from him because he booked in advance. of himself. Even Lawler was a good booker because he would book like what's presented to him. Like he would take over in the summer from the winter and the summer from Jerry Jarrett. But when the fall came, screw that. It's football season. I can't be dividing my attention on booking a territory that I own and watching NFL football. Ron Fuller, who we had on not that long ago, mm-hmm. as our guest, good booker. Eddie Graham, good booker. Eddie Graham was so good that I remember other bookers used to call him and ask his opinion. That's how good he was. And that's another call. I'm sorry, folks. But I would say those five right there are probably the top. And you can put Bill Watts in there, too. He was very good, too. But the rest of them, damn, I'm dying. But the rest of them, there we are. I got you back. Well, they were fly by nights, a lot of them. And like I said, anybody can be a booker. But to be a successful booker takes talent.
On that note, and because you're coughing yourself into a frenzy right over there, that you just muted yourself, God, as well, because you're coughing more, as I could see in the screen. I will close it off now. Thank you very much for sending all your questions in. If you want to send your question in for a future episode, it is questionsfordutch@gmail.com. questionsfordutch@gmail.com. As we said at the beginning, we've got books and everything else, blah, blah, blah. Give us 5 stars on iTunes.
Okay, wait a minute. Let me say something. We are thinking about doing a live podcast that people can tune in, and we want to know if anybody would be receptive to that. Mm-hmm. Just want to see how much response we get.
See, in my mind, I'm thinking you can do it live on your own.
Well, I can, but you can actually ask questions on the spur of the moment, and I'll answer them. So write us and tell us if you'd be receptive to that that initiative.
Yes, I can figure it out doing it on YouTube somehow if I was doing it. I think it'd be a lot harder for me to describe how you would do it, and then also get all the questions on the... I don't know, maybe for the first one, if we do one, we will have to do it where I'm fielding the questions maybe still. But we'll work it out. But as for now, we're on every Tuesday and Friday, 8 a.m. Eastern, a brand new episode. Apart from last Tuesday's episode, which the editor forgot to post, and he posted on Wednesday instead. But having said that, don't worry, I reamed him out. Not literally, but verbally.
That's funny.
I wasn't trying to, give him a treat or anything from it. I was trying to tell him off. Anyway, thank you very much for watching, and Dutch, we the people.
We the people. See you next week.